Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to STT Rewind. I'm Owen Hughes and joining me this week is Steve Norman. Coming up on the programme, in part one, we examine the furore brewing over Avengers Infinity War and just who is it made for anyway. Part two delves into the unknown world of TV programmes outside of BBC, HBO and Netflix originals. Trust me, they do exist. Matthew Latham brings back his two-minute movie roundup that he's been dubbing cassette tape until he's told otherwise, chatting ABBA, upcoming albums, and a guilty pleasure. And finally, we dust off our bookshelves and recharge our Kindles for this week's free play. Now, let's get on with the show. Part one of the podcast starts as it always does with our film section, and it seems there's only one inevitable set of starting blocks for us to sprint off from, specifically Avengers Infinity War. We can talk about how much we liked it, Steve. We can talk about the stuff we didn't like, how enjoyable it is, yada, yada, yada. But probably the biggest controversy of the entire weekend comes via The New Yorker. The American magazine tweeted a link to its review with the following comment. In Avengers Infinity War, characters aren't introduced. They show up and their behaviour is entirely defined by the template set for them in other movies. So subsequently, lots of people on both sides of the argument started their own cyber war that seemed to go on for infinity. Poor joke. Where do you stand, Steve? Is the fact that characters just turn up without any prior introduction in the 16th movie in a franchise a bad or confusing thing? Or should they start catering to the wider masses and not expect everyone to have seen every single film in the franchise coming into this?
First of all, we've already spoken about how much we liked it and what we didn't like for somewhere else. So, you know,
Yes, we did. We released a Failed Critics episode for it on our sixth birthday.
I feel happy plugging Failed Critics on Set the Takes. Without Failed Critics, there wouldn't be a Set the Tape.
Partly true, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so, back to this argument. I just think it's a one-sided argument, and the person who wrote the article for The New Yorker is a bit daft because I just don't really see his point of view. I just don't understand it. I mean, I think you could have watched that without have seeing any of the other Marvel films and kind of got it. You would have probably just picked up who some of the characters are via osmosis or just being involved in pop culture or not being in a cave for the last decade or so. But is his argument the same for Avengers Assemble? Could he not get his head around that?
Well, I think Avengers Assemble is slightly different because they did have kind of mini introductions to the characters. They weren't full on, you know, layered like things, but they were like short introductions to what each character's about.
I just think, why would you go into something that far down the line and complain about that side of it? You know, if they're going to introduce all of the characters in that film and gives people who haven't seen anything in the MCU before an explanation of who they are, how long is the film going to be? How rubbish is it going to be? I mean, it goes back to something like The Last Jedi, where as well, the same kind of argument, Snoke wasn't given a backstory. Did you really need one for him? Well, yes, we did, because he's in charge of the First Order and he's really good with the Force and the dark side and everything. Yeah, but the Emperor didn't have a backstory. Well, he did in the prequels. Yeah, that was 20 years later and everyone said the prequels was rubbish.
Sure.
So, you know, what do you want? Do you want... I mean, how do you... It's just going to be full of expositional dialogue, isn't it? Oh, this is Captain America. Oh, I've never met him before because I'm a Guardian of the Galaxy. Well, Captain America is this soldier who had this serum and now he's really strong and like invincible and he's got this shield from the guy over there. Who's that guy? That's Black Panther. Oh, yeah, what's he all about? Well, he's... In the King of Wakanda, Wakanda's this little country.
It's all right, Steve. We get it.
Yeah, exactly. And you got fed up of it then. Imagine what it's going to be like in a film with 30 characters.
Yeah. I think I'm not too bothered about discussing the article as it is. I think what's more interesting is the way that both sides of the argument have since developed. Because you've got one side who are saying, well, you wouldn't go into a TV show straight to the final season and say, well, why aren't they introducing all these people? I don't know what's going on. This is a fault with the actual TV show. Mm. And, you know, people say you wouldn't read the last chapter in a book and say, well, why, this doesn't make any sense. I don't know what's going on. Why would I, you know? But the other argument to it is, well, what about people who are new to this franchise? And I mean, believe it or not, I think there's still people who are, 10 years ago, Iron Man came out.
Mm.
And if you were, I don't know, 3, 4 around that time, you probably weren't going to the cinema to watch these films on a regular basis. So by the time that the 16th movie in the franchise comes out, which is one of the most, highest grossing films ever on its opening weekend, it's got all kinds of critical acclaim, and it's, you know, maybe you've grown up with the cartoons. If you go into this film and you were now, I don't know, 13, 14, you probably won't have any idea who these are. And is it fair to expect people to make sure they watch 15 films, spend God knows how many hours, probably over 30 hours, probably over 35 hours if you think about it, you know, spend that much time before you go and see this one for it to make sense?
No.
Or should they just not bother anyway? Is it just not for them anymore because of how much baggage that's associated with these characters?
It certainly is for them. It's for everybody, these type of films. They're kind of blockbuster that should appeal to the general cinema-going audience. There's a lot of movies to go through before that. I don't think you necessarily need to watch all of the movies that they've released to catch up. But if I hadn't seen any films in the MCU before, and someone said, let's go and see Infinity War, I would probably either at least read a plot line of the other films on Wikipedia or read up about the characters, or, more than that, I would actually go and watch some of the films. I'd probably say, find out somewhere on the internet somewhere, you can probably ask someone, right, I've never seen an MCU film, I'm going to see Infinity War, I ain't got enough time to see all 18 other films, give me 5 that I should watch.
Sure, and the other argument is you could watch this and then it might inspire you to go back and watch some of the others, you know. There might be the reverse effect of, you know, oh, this was quite entertaining, but I want to know more about these people and you go back to it. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to take this film. And you may go into this and think, well, I don't get what all the hype is about these films because I don't really like all the previous Marvel films anyway, and this one just seems more of the same. And it's, well, yeah, it's the 16th in a franchise of films that are all set around a particular template.
It does definitely require you to know something about the majority of the characters to know what's going on in the film. And what their motivations are. Actually, not even so much their motivations, because it's just good guy stop a bad guy. I think Thanos, who is the nearest thing you have to a new character in this film, really, I think he is explained, and his motives are explained very well.
I think most of it is.
And I think he's developed as a character really well in this film. Mm. And he's really the central character.
I would say so too, yeah.
Which is strange for him being a villain.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's been in Avengers
Since
Assemble.
Since Phase 1, basically.
Yeah, he's been in Avengers Assemble, Age of Ultron, Infinity War, and Guardians of the Galaxy, mostly in post-credit scenes or whatever.
But this is properly his first fleshed-out scene, because in Guardians of the Galaxy you see him, don't you? He interacts with Ronan and Nebula.
Yeah.
Basically the point is you don't need to know all that much about Thanos to come into this.
No.
However, I do see see both sides of the argument, you know. You are coming into the penultimate conclusion to this story, and you know, we're kind of expecting Avengers Infinity War 2 or whatever they decide to call it.
Thanos and his magic glove.
Yeah,
Avengers colon Thanos and his magic glove.
Yeah, you find out at the end, the magic glove, it summons a galactic Kez. It just comes and sits on his big glove on his wrist. Yeah, like I say, coming into the last film in the series, you wouldn't expect them to start reintroducing all these characters we've seen in over 15 prior films.
Yeah, it's probably a question neither of us could answer, but going with the side of the argument that says that the characters weren't introduced and it's not that accessible to people who aren't familiar with the MCU, how would you go about introducing about combating that in it won't make won't be a detriment to the film?
You'd have to do what you said, when you need lots of exposition to explain who's that guy with the hammer, or he hasn't got a hammer anymore, but and it would just take ages, it'd be really tedious, particularly for the large amount of credit. Let's not forget, the majority of the people who are going to this know what Avengers is about,
right? Yeah.
There are going to be new people coming to it, but I would wager they're in the absolute minority.
No, you wouldn't watch Deathly Hallows Part 2 if you haven't ever seen The Prisoner of Azkaban. That's good memories. I hate Harry Potter.
Nice. But yeah, well done.
But there you go.
Part 2, and we're, of course, changing topic from big screen to the small screen. Last week, The Terror made its debut on AMC, with the third episode airing this week, tonight at time of recording, actually, Steve. I don't know if you're aware. But I wanted to ask what you consider to be the best shows currently on TV that aren't made by BBC, HBO, or on Netflix. And don't say The Walking Dead.
I'm not going to say The Walking Dead, trust me. That's difficult because you've taken away Netflix, which is pretty much where I watch television.
I think that's how most people watch stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've got into a new series that isn't on any of those formats. Mm. Humans is coming back to Channel 4 very soon, which is in its third season now, which is the show about the synths, which are like robots, lifelike robots who kind of develop their own. Yeah, that's been quite good. I've enjoyed the first two seasons of that, and that's back on very soon on Channel 4. Mm-hmm. So I'll be going back to that when it's on. But yeah, trying to think of what else is...
So I can tell you a little bit about The Terror, if you like, which is a horror thriller series, which is made by AMC. And it's set in the North Pole. Some explorers get trapped in the ice and weird, creepy stuff starts happening to them. It's produced by Ridley Scott. It stars Jared Harris, Tobias Menzies. Kieran Hines is Captain Sir John Franklin. I loved the first two episodes. I thought it was fantastic TV, and I'm definitely going to go back to it. But it did get me thinking about what other shows are... there are that aren't made by those three big producers of television. It's still kind of... I think it was made for Hulu, wasn't it? But you've got The Handmaid's Tale, which is a pretty enormous TV show, which I thought was great. The second time, struggled through the first three episodes, went back to it, and then afterwards thought it was fantastic. But, I watched The Exorcist as well, the show's on the Sci-Fi Channel over here. And... I genuinely think it's one of the best TV shows of the past few years. You know, it's not made by HBO. It's not a Netflix original. Clearly, it's not a BBC series, but it is just a really good show. It's got the vibe of The Exorcist. The first season follows on from the movie, but then takes it in a different direction. It's only very loosely linked to the film. Second series is not really linked to the film at all. Not particularly, but it's great TV. Give us an example of something that you've watched that isn't made by any of those three. Is there anything you can think of?
Recently?
Yeah, are there any current TV shows? You could be watching them on Netflix, but just not necessarily them being Netflix originals, you know? The Good Place, right?
The Good Place, when you think about it, isn't a Netflix original, is it? It's just something that's not only accessible in the UK on Netflix.
Yeah.
So that's probably the most recent thing that I've watched. It's not been a Netflix original show or on the other two mediums that you mentioned, BBC and HBO.
What about comedy shows? Do you watch comedy on sort of Sky or...
Not much. I've not really got into much new comedy. You know, I found out The Inbetweeners is 10 years old today, which makes me feel well old.
It's quite a depressing thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's as old as the MCU.
Yeah, that's an odd comparison. And we've seen someone from The Inbetweeners turn up in the MCU as well.
Did he? Who was in
Not he. In the movie... In the first Inbetweeners movie, the girl who Will hooks up with is Star-Lord's mum.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's quite a good bit of trivia there.
Yeah, and that just links the whole podcast together effortlessly.
Yeah, succinctly. Well, I can link back to the first part of the podcast as well by mentioning Red Dwarf. Because I was at a Comic-Con type thing at the weekend, which was for work. It was I was reporting on it. But I went along, took some pictures of people in weird cosplay stuff. But there was Danny Donjules and Robert Llewellyn from Red Dwarf doing a Q&A.
Okay.
And they confirmed that the show is coming back for a 13th series, which is made by UK TV. It's on Dave.
Yeah, I mean, Dave are doing a lot of original content lately, which is good considering they just used to be a channel for repeats.
That was the whole joke about Dave, wasn't it? Yeah. How many times are you going to watch the same Have I Got News For You episode?
And I could never get why Have I Got News For You was on there, because it's so topical. Why would you want to watch an 8-year-old episode if I Got News For You? But it was, you know, the running joke.
Well, yeah, and they are doing lots of new things. We've got Taskmaster, which starts this week at time of recording. We've also got Alex Horn, who's the host of Taskmaster. Well, he's kind of a co-host of Taskmaster. His band, the Horn Section, have got a brand new comedy series coming to Dave as well, which will be later this month in May. But
they've got Dave Gorman's Modern Life Is Goodish, which is also very good.
It's got, and John Richardson, Ultimate Warrior, I nearly called him the Ultimate Warrior then. He's not the Ultimate Warrior.
No,
John Richardson, Ultimate Warrior, is on, is starting soon on Dave. And we've also got a review of that on the website at the moment.
They have done a few of their own sitcoms as well, haven't they? Comedy, you know. Yeah.
Well,
sitcoms.
Zapped, you know, James Buckley from Inbetweeners as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like I said, I've watched the last few series of Red Dwarf, that's been on Dave. It's not peak Red Dwarf by any means, but it's not the worst either. It's very watchable still.
Yeah, I think so. The last series I thought was quite entertaining for the most part. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, it's lost a little bit of something. It's interesting because during the Q&A, they were talking about how when they started, you know, they'd have the studio audience come in. And to them, it was new and exciting and different and unlike anything else. So the crowd would just like laugh at the punchlines of the jokes, you know. There might be a few titters when they're doing the setup, and then as soon as the punchline hit, that's when everybody laughed. But they were saying, no, what they usually do is they have feed line, punchline. That's been the same through the whole of the 12 series.
Yeah.
But the audiences who come into it now are like proper cult hardcore Red Dwarf fans. They were saying they come to recordings from like Japan, America.
It must have a pretty big cult following. It was even kind of referenced a couple of times in The Big Bang Theory, which shows of kind of, I know that's a show about geeks or whatever you want to call them, but and it's all very referential about, you know, the kind of shows that they watch and everything. But to get a couple of mentions in a show of that size probably does help its cult following.
Sure.
But it's going to make people curious as to what it is.
Yeah. Well, they were saying the audiences who come to it now are all like big fans of the show. And so normally when they'd have a feed line, which would get a few people go, waiting like in anticipation of the joke, they basically get feed line, massive laugh. And they're all looking at each other like, well, we haven't said anything funny yet. Second feed line, enormous laugh, and then punchline falls flat because people just aren't into it in the same way anymore. They just like the characters and everything. So it's quite interesting, I think, of how the reaction to the programs changed over time.
Yeah.
Maybe it's still of the same quality, but we've just become too used to it. I don't know. But we did end up, me and my wife did end up going back and watching some of the older episodes on Netflix, funnily enough. I think the old episodes still have a huge amount of quality in them. You can still enjoy them now.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Anyway, we're getting slightly off topic. Because I was trying to think, when I was watching The Terror, I was trying to think, well, what else do I watch that isn't one of the big three, certainly the big three in the UK for producing TV? And I mean, even Amazon Originals, they haven't really given many of those much of a chance.
No. You
know, other than Preacher, but I didn't really stick with that for the second series.
I've only just got Amazon Prime Video, and this is probably not completely unrelated to what we're talking about. I find it a bit more difficult to navigate this thing like Netflix.
Sure.
Because like, it doesn't always list, when you're going scrolling through everything that's available, it doesn't always make it distinctly clear to me which one I have to pay for and which one is included in Prime Video.
Yeah.
I'm basically using, you know, my parents have Amazon Prime. They don't use the Prime Video. They just use it for the Amazon deliveries. So I'm just using the Prime Video to watch video, you know, watch stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it, you know, always obvious. You'll click on something and then all of a sudden it's no, pay $5.99 for this. So I can't really make my parents pay $5.99 so I can watch this film once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I? No, I can't. I can't. So yeah. So
I think maybe there are good shows being produced elsewhere. The DC shows seem to be doing quite well, you know, Arrow and Flash and
better than the movies.
Certainly more popular than the movies. Yeah. Yeah. So next up we have the return of Matt Latham's 2 Minute Music Roundup.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome one, welcome all to the next edition of the Music Bit of the Set the Type podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Latham. The Music Bit needs a better name if I'm totally honest. Maybe the Walkman or perhaps the cassette tape. Let us know on Facebook/Twitter/Carrier Pigeon. I am quite partial to the cassette tape, however. I guess the big news is that in December we'll be getting new ABBA songs. There have been at least two that have been recorded, and there are plans for a virtual tour in 2019 using similar technology that was used with Tupac in Coachella in 2012. They've already squashed plans for performing in person, however, and had to publicly state that they won't be performing at Glastonbury next year. Spokeswoman and manager Gurel Hansa told The Mirror, "We should remember them how they were in the 1970s and we should listen to how they sing today." Talking about live music and shifting across, I saw Natalie Prass on tour a few days ago. She gears up to release her second LP, The Future and the Past, on June the 1st. It was a lot of fun, there's a vibrant energy and her new song sounded great. There's a bit more of an electric feel than the last album, which was a bit more perhaps soulful, but her new songs worked very well live. If you haven't listened to the song Shortcut Style yet, it is definitely one of those songs you're going to see at the top of the 2018 lists. And the heads up on the albums to look forward to in the next couple of weeks. There's only just really one on my radar at the moment, and that's Frank Turner's seventh album, Be More Kind. I'm a big fan of Frank Turner, and he's had a strong influence on my music taste. Blackout is perhaps one of the best singles he's had out for a couple of years. Kind of reminds me of Van Halen's Jump, and I'm going to come out and miss it now. I like Jump, and I mean that in a good way, of course. I'm partial to a bit of jumping around to hair metal. And that's all for me on this edition of the cassette tape, which I think I'll stick with until I'm told otherwise. Have a great fortnight, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Matt Latham, for another music review. But we're going straight into Free Play now, and we're going to cover a topic that we haven't yet to so far on STT Rewind. We're talking books, because already up on the website we have Wendy's review of The City of Lost Fortunes, and coming up next week there'll be Amy's review of The Rig. I mean, we cover books as quickly as we can read them, but never really talk about them on here on the podcast. And I think there's a couple of interesting directions we can go with this, because I overheard someone at work last week who said, you know, naming no names, and I don't think there's any shame in it, but they said they'd never read a book cover to cover for fun. Or not that they'd never done it, I guess, but they just haven't done it in a long, long time. And they just don't really enjoy reading. I haven't read a full book in probably over a year. I just went through university, and just went through uni and read loads of books for that, but in chapters. I've read halfway through two books, which I say I've got on the go, but I've had them on the go since about May last year. I just find the time, I just find finding the time to read books is more difficult than it is for me to go into Comixology and flick through a comic or, you know, listen to some podcasts or audio plays or whatever. How about you, Steve? What are you like? Are you an avid reader or not so much?
No, not so much, but that's partly because I lost my Kindle. I prefer having having a real physical book. I don't know why. I prefer having a real physical book to a digital book, but I've got a small flat and books take up hell of a lot of room. They take up a lot of space. So I don't usually get books. I usually get them digitally, and I lost my Kindle. I looked everywhere for it. It turned out it was in the suitcase I borrowed off my mum and dad for when I went on holiday last. I'd left it in there at their house and didn't even realise.
How long ago was that then?
I'd lost it for a good year and a bit. And I reckon once a month I'd turn my flat upside down looking for it. Ridiculous. But anyway, so I mean, there's about four places I do read when I do read. It's in bed, on the sunbed, in the toilet or in the bath.
And how often are you on the sunbed at the minute?
Well, not very often, but you know what I mean? Most people, when they go on holiday, they'll take a few books with them and absolutely, you know, storm through them. My girlfriend can go for about four books on a week's holiday. I'm still sat there on the first page of the crossword book. But I mean, I have read a couple of books recently, or reread a couple of books recently. They're not new by any means. One was because I rewatched the Band of Brothers series on DVD recently, and I had the book that kind of inspired the series. So I reread that after watching the series again. And I'm now rereading through a book called Up Pompeii, which is about these two guys who went and basically kickstarted football in the Federated States of Micronesia, which is really good. I've read the book once through before, but it's one that I've already owned, so I've been rereading through that, which is quite an entertaining and a good read. I've got quite a lot of football books I do reread from time to time, things like that, or not really autobiographies too much, but things like that, or inverting the pyramid,
well, you're a football manager, aren't you? So
The Secret Footballer, and a few other football books as well that I read through, you know, probably reread every now and again. I haven't bought much new literature in a while.
No, I don't tend to get much new stuff either. I mean, when I do read, I'm reading older stuff. I mean, you mentioned autobiographies. Did I tell you the last autobiography I read?
No.
Benjamin Franklin's. So, you know, that's not exactly new.
No. I mean, the next time I buy a physical book that isn't a present for someone, I imagine it'll be at the airport.
Well,
in W.H. Smith's.
Yeah, I got given a book token when I was at uni.
Yeah.
And rather than using it to buy books for uni, I just bought a whole pile of like the Sci-Fi Masterworks series. So I read The Forever War. One of those books that I have on the go at the moment is Philip K. Dick's A Scanner Darkly, which is weird. Weird as hell. But I've never seen the film. So I thought, you know what, I'll give that a chance. And it's, you know, it's good, but weird. very, very odd. I also picked up a book, which was, I think I mentioned this to you a long time ago, actually, which was a translation of an old French poem about King Arthur. But it's flipping hard work, you know, as you, I suppose you might expect
it to
be.
Yeah, you did mention it to me. I didn't have a clue what it was all about.
Yeah, well, it's like, because it was around the time I think King Arthur was coming out, the Guy Ritchie movie. I just thought I'd pick up and read this book, and dribs and drabs been working my way through it. Yeah. But yeah, you mentioned you prefer hardback or paperbacks or a physical copy of a book to a Kindle. What do you think it has over a Kindle, considering it's so convenient? You know,
I don't know. And like I said, I read, you know, in the bath or by the poolside. So neither medium is waterproof.
That's
if
true.
If I drop the book or drop the Kindle, it's done.
Yeah. Have you ever tried reading a book on your phone?
No.
Yeah, I put the Kindle.
I'm too busy playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't got time for books when you're hunting Pokemons.
Yeah.
But I tried reading it on a phone. It just doesn't work. It's just not the same. Like a Kindle, even. I've got one of the older versions that's not backlit and it's got, you know, the buttons rather than a touchscreen. I like reading on that.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think I probably, if I had the choice now, I think I would probably get a digital copy on the Kindle.
Yeah.
And, you know, 3-4 years ago, that probably wouldn't have been the case because I like the old sort of Penguin Classics and, you know, all the ones that they've put effort into creating a nice copy of.
I don't know why there's this thing about having a real book, but it does. I don't know. It's strange.
Well, I was at that Comic Con that I mentioned earlier, and there were people with stalls flogging all their, you know, books and comics and graphic novels and all that kind of thing. And, you know, even there, just picking it up and feeling the book was just quite nice. I didn't buy any because I'm not made of money. But
yeah.
It's kind of a nostalgic feeling as well, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I suppose I should, before we go, just plug Wendy's review of The City of Lost Fortunes again and build up some hype for Amy's amazing, spectacular review of The Rig, which is on the website next week. And that is the end of another STT Rewind. Thanks for listening. I've been and still am Owen Hughes, co-editor of Set the Tape. Joining me was Set the Tape writer Steve Norman with contributions from Matt Latham. If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please do leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Don't forget to also follow us online at setthetape.com, where you can find daily articles on all things pop culture. Thanks for listening.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has 2 limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.